Events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365. Bam! 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Lynch's Cloud Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and along with an ensemble of NPR quality hosts, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, and engineer and media maven Nicole Rochelin, we celebrate the power of story by putting the spotlight on storytellers who take us on soulful journeys with moving narratives and folk tales with quirky characters, or treat us to parables produced by complete enchantment. You know, people tell us that we produce a unique program. At Larry Thompson's concert this past Saturday, which, by the way, was fabulous, a wealth advisor from a major brokerage firm thanked Larry for his program, and then he told me how excited he is that storytelling has made its way into the corporate world as a fresh, new method for engaging customers. Well, the artistry that dots the storyteller's landscape has been around since 2000 BC, and perceptive executives have used storytelling for more decades than history can count, and all for very good reason. See, storytelling plays an important role in social bonding by stimulating empathy. Interestingly, scientists have found that character-driven stories do cause oxytocin in your brain, the same chemical we feel when surrounded by the love of our furry little friends, the dog. This matters more than you'll ever know, because whether we track the history of this art, explore its long list of benefits, or probe the collection of current trends in telling, storytellers prove to be inspirational, because personal narratives show us the wisdom in taking other people's perception of reality to be as true as our own. That's right. Storytelling helps us respect others, a behavior too often that appears to be missing from the human experience. Now, these are some of the reasons why we do the program. It's also the reason that I get students involved, because you know what? Students often get a bad rap. They're told that they have empty priorities, they lack culture, and are obsessed with favorite words like, like, and you know. And most of all, they're told they can't communicate unless they plug something in. Well, these contentions aren't entirely true, at least not in my world. And you'll know why tonight when you listen to some of my former students, along with a few past guest tellers from Johnson Middle School, tell their stories. And because it's June, you'll hear a few tales about Dad. A little variety, but here's the thing they all have in common. They will remind us of the power of human connection, unplugged. Ethel Anderson Bilieux is a UHD senior majoring in interdisciplinary studies. Artist, writer, potter, soap and lotion maker, and handwriting analyst, Ethel is more than eclectic. She's artistically ambidextrous. Melanie Perez is a sophomore at UHD majoring in communication. She's planning a career in public relations and wants to eventually own her own creative agency. Her most important objective is to promote positive social change. A communication major in her junior year at UHD, Tatiana Gago, wants a career in media. In the meantime, she's honing her martial arts skills, travel, and long walks on the beach. And that martial arts, you don't want to mess with her. That's all I can say. Hello, everybody. Now we're here.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you guys are here. How did it feel when I first asked you to come on the radio? Because you guys were a little nervous, except Ethel, because she's seasoned, right?
Yes.
Right. How right? How did you feel?
It was pretty exciting because I usually listen to the show every Wednesday. And, well, it feels pretty awesome being on this side.
That's right. This is the most popular show in town, isn't it? Yeah. It's internationally broadcast all over the world. Yeah. Well, maybe in just a different city. Right. Exactly. Melanie, what did you think?
I was instantly terrified, but I also knew I had to do it because I felt like that wasn't a good enough reason to say no.
And you're right. It isn't good enough of a reason to say no. You're absolutely right. Tatiana, you know, are you a black belt, by the way?
Far from it.
You are far from it. How long have you been doing martial arts?
I've been doing kickboxing for almost 2 years, a year and a half, and I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 2 weeks.
Competitive kickboxing?
No.
No.
Not
okay.
yet.
All right. So you're not that terrifying yet.
No, not yet.
You're not
yet.
That terribly intimidating, right? Okay. What kind of media position would you like?
Perhaps online marketing or anything really just to get a good message out to the people.
Tatiana's going to be our new intern this fall. We're real excited about that, right? And we are very, very happy to have you along. So you can sort of consider this to be your premiere, right? Kind of, sort of. Melanie, if you had the power to make one positive social change, I love this, because this is so, you know, it's so simple that it's unique to make a positive social change, because that's what rhetoric is all about. That's what I teach. That's why we're even involved in communication. But what is the one positive social change that you would love to make if you had your choice?
Well, I'm most interested in creating a positive social change in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So since I do want to have my own business one day, I want to be a generous boss and provide an amazing opportunity for my employees.
That's wonderful. That's great. So you want to be a really good boss.
Yes, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Have you ever had a good boss?
Yes.
Right. Have you had a bad boss?
Oh, yes,
of course. What are some of the characteristics of a bad boss?
Just no communication at all.
Right. None at all. Mm-hmm. Right. And we know better than that. And Ethel, you are, among other things, how did you become a handwriting analyst?
Well, I worked in an office where everyone signed birthday cards, and there was one particular person who signed the birthday card the wrong way, I thought.
The wrong way?
Yeah, she had a strange little bead at the bottom of all of her Y's. And I decided I wanted to find out what that meant, and I did.
You did? Well, what does it mean? Is it something you can say on the air?
She's very clannish.
Clannish? Is she indeed clannish?
Yes, she was.
So this stuff is pretty accurate, you think?
I think so.
It's a science. Yeah. Now, I have here, I was going to ask you what you know about my handwriting based on what you've seen, if it's something really wonderful that you can share on the air.
Well, that you're emotional.
Me?
You're persistent.
Oh, God.
You're determined.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear everything that people say.
Well, that's kind of nice.
And you're not afraid to tell the truth.
I'm not afraid to tell the truth. You're right. Well, that is, you're not making all of that up.
No, I'm not.
Because that's all really good. Yeah, my wife would say that I also have too good of a memory. I remember everything, and that's not necessarily good. You know, when you, I didn't know that you were really interested in communication as well, although obviously handwriting analysis is. But what is a micro expression? I've heard that word several times, and there are different uses of that term. But you're interested in people's behavior.
Yes, I am.
And that's understandable because of handwriting analysis. But what's a micro expression?
It's 1/25th of a second.
Wow.
And Paul Ekman is the one who made the breakthrough with those expressions.
So the Ekman and Friesen, the I behavior. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's heavy stuff. Yeah. So you're interested in nonverbal.
Yes.
Beautiful. Tatiana, you have a story. Let's get to some of these wonderful stories. You have a story fueled by a desire to witness a perfect moment, right? Mm-hmm. And before you tell us the story, why is it so important to find perfection?
For me, it's something that you can keep imagining over and over. So that's how I would find something to be perfect.
Do you want to be perfect, really?
Not really. Yeah. Just
What's the difference between being perfect and being excellent?
Well, excellent, I feel like it would be successful.
Right.
With perfection.
Yeah.
I don't really know how I could say with perfection.
Well, you're a pretty good student, and you're no one's perfect, but I'll tell you, you come pretty close in many ways. You're very, very meticulous. But, you know, if you're perfect, I don't know if you'll ever get anything done, because you're still striving for something better. Right, and that could be a little bit difficult. But we are looking forward to your story, because this story is very unique as far as its parable. Let's hear your story.
So when we're kids, we always have curiosity. especially with the stuff that happens to us or in our lives. When I was 8 years old, I had a fascination and curiosity with the human anatomy, especially the female reproductive system. My uncle, he owns a hospital in Barranquilla, Colombia. So every time I would visit him, I would ask him for 8 years, can I see a childbirth? And every time he would tell me, no, because I was too young, quote unquote. So 8 years later, when I was 16, June of 2013, I was able to get an amazing opportunity. During that summer, I was a pharmacy assistant, and I packaged medication to nurses so they can give to doctors and for other operations. I remember I was sitting in the cafeteria. I was sitting with all the other pharmacists. I was trying to be cool, trying to blend in. I had one of the head pharmacists come to me, and she said, get ready in 10 minutes because you're going to observe your first C-section. I immediately got out of that table and went into a restroom and started changing into scrubs. But for some reason, I just started to cry after I put on my scrubs. I wasn't scared. I was more overwhelmed because this was something that I've desired to see for 8 years, and it was something that I can't believe was actually happening. So after a few minutes in there, I calmed myself down and then was escorted by a nurse to the operating room. She was holding my hand, and she told me to close my eyes and to count to three. So we go in, and there are nurses, the doctors, and then there's the mom, who's exposed, meaning she's already been cut open. So she tells me to count to three. One, two, three. And I open my eyes, and I see the birth of a beautiful, healthy baby girl. So the whole room was excited. We got the baby to cry. It was a successful operation right there. They took the baby out, sent her to another room to get her cleaned. And then the mom, now was her time to get her cleaned. And in these operations, they use rags to clean up the blood. And specifically, there are 10 rags. Why are there 10? I don't know. So the doctor does his thing, and he cleans her up, sews her back on, successful operation. So he thought. For a moment, he counted 9 rags. And so he realized that one was missing. And remember I mentioned that there were 10? So he begins to panic and asks around, where's the 10th rag? Where's the 10th rag? He goes to the nurse and asks her, where is the 10th rag? And she replies with, I don't know. He begins to raise his voice and he says, well, you better go find it. She leaves the room running, and out of panic, people are just stammering and there's a silence. Then someone comes up and says, maybe the rag is inside of her. Immediately, they open her up again, and in a panic, she looks at me, thinking that I'm a doctor, the mother. She asks me, am I going to be okay? Is my baby going to be okay? And I tell her, yes. Realizing my mistake, I run out the operating room, and then I go and lean against the wall because I was feeling faint and nervous from all the yelling and screaming and seeing all that blood again. And I had two nurses follow me and asking me, are you okay, Tatiana? Are you okay? Do you need anything? I tell them, no, there's just too much yelling. And you need to go back. She's more important. So a few minutes pass by, and there was like a big sigh of relief coming from everybody. The rag wasn't inside of her, but it was found. Where was it? I don't know. But eventually everything was fine. Nothing was really wrong at the end, and really, despite the mishap that happened in that situation, a moment that I have thought about for years, for 8 years, I didn't ever expect it to happen like this. But still, it was such a beautiful moment that kept me in awe, and I would never change it.
That's beautiful, Tatiana. It really is. You know, what's unique about that story is that the situation itself isn't unique, but you make it unique. Those kinds of things that we notice in life that most people really don't. What was it about that that you noticed?
It was just how people worked together.
Yeah, yeah.
And just the unity that came in when everybody realized that that rag was missing. Mm-hmm. And they all focused on the mother and on the baby and if everything is okay.
My son was born C-section, and it was a unique experience. It really was. And it was a little scary. It really was. Of course, I tell him that I bought them at Walmart for $6.99 and he wasn't returnable. But yeah, but he's, but it was a very scary moment. It was beautiful. What would you like us to walk away with that story? There are a lot of different lessons there.
Oh,
what's
yeah.
the one thing you want us to focus on?
Sometimes the moments that you picture that you want to be perfect sometimes don't always come out the way you want it.
They really don't. So perfection, in short, really doesn't have to be perfect. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, the whole idea of nature is perfect.
Yes.
Can't be touched. It's pure. Beautiful. Beautiful. Melanie, I know that you're interested in a creative agency, right? And advertising is sort of a story, I think. I always talk about advertising as being storytelling. What is your favorite advertisement? I know you probably have several, but what's one that comes to mind?
Yeah, my most favorite is the original 1979 Alien movie poster.
Wow, okay. What makes that one so cool? You have a great voice, by the way.
Thank you.
You have a great voice? Yeah, you have a great radio voice.
Thank you.
But you have a very, my God, I feel in a better mood just listening to Melanie. Right.
Yeah. It's my favorite because I feel like it was very just completely new thing when it came out and very innovative. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Alien. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My favorite is I love certain commercials. The one I really like is what Johnson & Johnson does with a lot of their ads. There's this one ad that just touches me. It's about a hospice nurse, and this is a Johnson & Johnson advertisement, and there's a woman who's dying, and it's a pretty popular ad, and she says that my patient is Helga, and she's from Finland, and this is the nurse speaking, and she says, Helga tells me that the day you die, the window opens, and in comes a really beautiful male angel and takes you to heaven, which sounds pretty good, and then the nurse says to Helga, that's a beautiful story, Helga, but not today. Not today. And, you know, it's a 30-second clip, but it's beautiful, and it's a story. Mm-hmm. How do you suppose a story is told so effectively in advertising in 30 seconds or less?
Oh, definitely appealing to the viewer's emotions and creating that sense yeah. of intimacy or closeness.
Yeah, I think that's very true, and I think that's a great insight. It really is a way of tapping into that intimacy. What was your expectation when you enrolled in that storytelling class? Because I know that you were, remember at the beginning of the class, and I wonder, why did you take that class? What was your
when I was a kid, I was always making up stories and reading books. I was just, it was my life, so I thought it would be a great way to reconnect with that in a fulfilling way.
Beautiful, yeah. I honestly thought it was just because you thought that I was perfect. But, yeah, I was saying there are very few things that are perfect. Mm-hmm. I just thought for sure you'd say that. But then again, that's just wishful thinking. Now, you made a lot of improvements in your from your first story, Melanie. A lot of people did, but yours was, I think, really very noticeable. But what was most noticeable is your level of confidence. Where did that confidence come from?
Well, in your storytelling class, we learned about the emotional seeds and figuring out where in your emotions mm-hmm. that the story comes from. So connecting to that, realizing that my story came from the heart allowed me to have that confidence in telling it.
That's beautiful. Well, I appreciate that. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later, too, interestingly enough. But yeah, those seeds really do tell you where that tone is, where the impetus is behind the story. You have to dig deep to find them. So I appreciate you saying that. Your story is about what I would refer to as sort of a healthy existence, emotional transformation. And now I understand why the story is important to you, because you're an emotional person and you understand the power of emotion well suited and well directed in a story. Tell us a story. Okay. We're going to enjoy this.
When I was a kid growing up, Christmas was always my favorite holiday. As soon as Halloween day had passed, I would be counting down the weeks and the days until the 25th of December. And when Christmas Eve, when the night finally came, I would lie awake in bed restless, just waiting to hear that slight rustle of wrapping paper that told me that my parents were bringing the gifts out to their final destination. I would crack the door open and peer out, trying to get a look at this just beautiful view that I knew would be awaiting me. My mom and my dad always did so much and sacrifice of themselves to just give us a very unique and special Christmas time. And we had a lot of traditions that we shared together as our family, one of them being decorating the Christmas tree. So every Christmas Eve, I would be so anxious to get out there and see what they had created for us. So as soon as I knew my parents were off to bed, they were asleep, it was okay, I would tiptoe out and I would just take a look and just take it all in. This beautiful Christmas tree towering up to the ceiling above me, and these beautifully, meticulously wrapped with satin ribbon just nestled amongst the Christmas tree. It just really was magical for me. And we had a very special Christmas tree kind of tradition that we did every year. After Thanksgiving, we would all get together as a family. We would listen to those classic Christmas music, and we would decorate the tree together. And we had a tradition where every year, me and my brothers would go with my mom. We would go and pick out a Christmas ornament, a new one, something that was special to just us. So over the years, I had collected in a collected collection. I had glass ballet slippers, angels with real feathers for wings. I had glittery sea creatures, grand pianos. Of course, my brothers chose Santa Clauses canoeing, Santa Clauses on a motorcycle. But it was always very special to me. And of course, growing up, my mom always told me, you know, when you move out, you can take your ornaments with you and put them on your own tree in your own home. So I always looked forward to having that, being able to take my ornaments with me to my life as an adult. So when I moved out last year, you know, as Christmas was approaching, you can imagine how excited I was to put my own tree up with my beautiful ornaments that I'd collected over my life. So Christmas of 2016 starts getting a little closer. It's beginning of December. My boyfriend and I decide to put the tree up. And we have a fake tree. And if you've ever had a fake tree, you know they're really convenient, but they can be such a hassle to assemble. You have to connect all the light bulbs and everything has to be working perfectly. So it took us a little bit to get it up, but it was okay. I was feeling good. This is what I had always dreamed of growing up. It was a symbol of my independence and my adulthood right here in my apartment. So we finally get the tree up, and I'm so excited, but I feel a little let down because it just doesn't look like my family's Christmas tree. I have my ornaments up there, but there's all these bare spots. It looks empty. It just looks lifeless. And so I was just a little let down by that, but I was just brushing it off. I was happy, feeling good. It's Christmas time. But soon the tree became a great source of contention in our household between my boyfriend and I. Our cat, our beloved cat, she took up a habit of biting the pine needles and swallowing them, and it would make her sick all over the apartment. And I was so stubborn about that tree and having it up, and it meant so much to me. I couldn't let it go, even though my cat, who I loved so much, was getting sick over it. And my boyfriend, who was such a father to the cats, he was so worried about her having an intestinal blockage or getting really sick. And we just started arguing back and forth about it. And it started off small, and it started snowballing into something bigger, where I started feeling a lot of anger and resentment, and I was so stubborn, I didn't want to let go of my Christmas tree. And it started just coming out in day-to-day conversations where I just felt that something was off and I didn't want to face it. I felt like I had a block in my heart and I couldn't face it because it was too painful for me. Eventually, my boyfriend gently took me aside, and he suggested that maybe there was something deeper going on that I needed to consider. And in that moment, I just felt tears streaming down my face as I realized the answer was so simple. I missed my family. I had been moved out for months, and not having them around for Christmas time just to celebrate with them in day-to-day life was such a big missing chunk of my life. I didn't even realize it. And it was at that moment that I just experienced this dramatic shift in my perspective. And I realized that it was never about the tree. It was about the experiences I shared with my family, with my brothers, and just being with them and being happy with them for the sake of just being happy with them. And that was the moment I was able to let go of all that resentment, and I felt it falling away from me like a cocoon, and I felt like a new person in that moment. It's also given me a lot more gratitude for my family. I never realized how much those traditions meant to me. So for Christmas of 2016, when my boyfriend and I went home to my parents' house for Christmas, I had such an intense gratitude for them and for the traditions that my parents passed along to me, and it has been the sweetest Christmas ever.
That's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's the simplicity that makes it really profound. So thanks to your boyfriend, Dr. Phil, who got you to figure out exactly what was going on, right? Well,
he's
that was nice
supportive.
Of him. But your poor cat, was probably wondering, what is your problem, Melanie? Don't you like me anymore? Right? Yeah, what do you want us to take from that story?
I would say that if you can recognize that you're having an issue emotionally, it's always, always worth it to just take a deeper look at what's going on. Yeah. It's always going to be fulfilling.
Always a hidden agenda. Yeah, that's a great point. You are listening to guest storytellers Ethel Anderson-Villio, Melanie Perez, and Tatiana, excuse me, I can't even talk tonight, Tatiana Gago, on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville on So What's Your Story? And I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with Nicole Rocherlin at the controls. Nicole, how was your daughter's graduation? We got to get Nicole in here.
It was amazing. It was such
amazing.
A beautiful moment.
Right. Tatiana, you're not graduating yet, are you?
I graduated in 2 years.
2 years. Okay, good. We had to get another graduate in here, but I'm just curious. So go ahead. It was great.
It was great. My daughter looked amazing. I never thought a cap and gown, which absolutely does nothing for her figure, as she would say, would look so beautiful on her.
But let's face it, you're looking forward to getting rid of her, aren't you? I mean, really? She's out of the house. She'll be making a living.
I told her, hey, you're out of here.
You know, I mean, you heard what Melanie said. You have to really kind of dig deep and find the truth.
Yes,
right?
The truth is
right?
She graduated. Huh? I did my job.
It's perfect. That's Tatiana. This is a perfect moment for you. Get rid of my daughter. Well, that's wonderful. What does she plan on doing?
Well, she wants to start off at community college simply because she wants to spread her wings, meaning she wants to be a flight attendant and earn a degree at the same time.
Very good. That's wonderful.
It's a great place to start.
Well, the main thing is that she won't be driving you nuts, right? But I'll tell you what is
that's
nuts.
That's the main thing.
And that's keeping up with all the terrific storytelling venues around town. So what can we do to keep it all straight, Nicole? Tell us.
Well, let's start out with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, and their story swaps that meet the fourth Tuesday of every month in the library at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. Now, you can go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org, for all the fun happenings and to listen to all of our past So What's Your Story programs, every show since 2008, guys, by going through the menu and clicking on radio program and enjoy. And you know what? You said it tonight's introduction that our team rivals NPR, but I think you're better. And guess what? Our listeners can tell us what they are thinking or express their program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and we promise to get back with you. Please be sure to share our page with your friends, families, loved ones, co-workers, and we'd love it if you like us before you leave. Also, you can check out our program clips on YouTube, and don't miss our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live at the second Tuesday of the month. They rock as one of the top storytelling spots in town.
I'm exhausted just hearing that. Thank you, Nicole, for always spreading a good word about Houston storytelling. Truly a city of teller dwellers. And I'm talking not about professional tellers necessarily, although we've certainly had lots of pros grace this studio, but we're talking about regular people with really astonishing stories to tell. Ethel, I loved having you in class. I really did. And, you know, I have that plan to say tonight, but you know that I mean that. I would have said that to you in any other context because you really did convey wisdom to those around you. And I think that's a very, very rare thing for anyone to accomplish, even professors. Well, what prompted you to come back to school?
Well, I was in a nationwide layoff mm-hmm. by a large company. and they outsourced our jobs to the Philippines, India, and Pakistan. And the Department of Labor stepped in and told the people who had been laid off that they could go back to college and get a degree in another area if they wanted. And I decided to go back to college and get a degree so that I could keep on working.
Very good. Very, very good. You know, the first story that you told, I'll never forget it because it was a great, one of the best attention-getting devices I ever heard. You started your story and you said, I was born before Pearl Harbor. I looked around the room and I knew nobody really knew when Pearl Harbor even occurred, which in a way was kind of scary. But it really, I thought, was a stark statement about how quickly our lives evolve. I really do. And the dynamics of life. And I thought it was just wonderful that you shared that. Because in that moment, we realized, you know, the connection we have, regardless of age, we're all sitting in a room. And the kind of experiences that we share are really quite amazing, quite insurmountable. What did you learn from your younger classmates? I know that's kind of a loaded question, but...
Well, I learned how important parenting had been to each of them. They all told stories about parents not understanding them or not approving of what they had done. And I began to understand how truly important... I knew it for myself, but I made the connection with the other students that we all are connected to our parents' approval, yeah. And we can be hurt by them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, other than historical events, what did you find to be the difference between some of the stories told by today's typical age college students and the kind that you heard when you were going to school?
When I was going to school, it was really simple. We didn't have a lot of things to worry about. We could go out and play. And they are challenged by all of the technology today. And they are isolated by the technology today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I love, love, love this story. Listen to this title, everybody. Just in case God is a Presbyterian. Okay, now that says a lot about you. All good, but let's hear your story.
Okay, when I used to go to the car wash on Saturdays with my mom, and it was it amounted to a series of stories called the Car Wash Chronicles. I found out a lot about my heritage from my mom because she was comfortable telling stories in this little cocoon of a car in a car wash. When she was alive, she was a great storyteller. She was born in 1912, right at the beginning of 1912, and in April, the Titanic sank. And they must have talked about it a great deal around her house because she was fascinated with ships and sailing ships in particular. She was an artist, and she drew lots of sailing ships with their sails. And she had an entire collection. She was also a mural artist. So we went to the car wash this one Saturday afternoon, and we got into the car wash, and because I had a leaky window on each side, we had brought paper towels, and we were stuffing them into the lining around the doors so that the water wouldn't come into the car. And suddenly, Mama remembered about battening down the hatches on sailing ships. She said that when they got into a storm, they had oilcloth that they would put over the hatches so that everybody covered them and it wouldn't destroy the cargo that they were carrying. And she mentioned that my grandfather had been 14 years old in about 1874, and he had been on a ship that was heading into a storm. I'd never heard this story from her. But as we rolled into the car wash, it began spraying soap all over the windows, and it was almost like being in an ocean liner or on a sailing ship. She said that the captain had always told my grandfather that he had to hold on to whatever he could when he was in a storm so that he wouldn't fall overboard because they could not go back and save anybody who had fallen overboard. So this storm is getting worse and worse and worse. And my little grandfather, who's 14 years old, is trying to hold on. And suddenly the ship lurches and he slides off the deck and into the ocean and goes deep into the ocean, comes back up, and he's gasping for air and he sees the ship sailing on in the distance. About an hour later, the captain noticed that he wasn't there, and he started telling the other sailors to look for him, and they realized that he had fallen overboard. And the captain cursed a great deal, from what I understand. He was a Presbyterian. He believed in destiny, and he believed that God spoke to people. But he couldn't put the ship in jeopardy again and turn it around to go back to get my grandfather. But suddenly he decided to do that. Everybody on the ship was so surprised when he suddenly said, "We're going back," because they could have lost their lives as well, and they could have lost the ship. It took a while to turn the ship around, and they went back looking for my grandfather, who was this little 14-year-old boy who had learned to float in water. And they found him, and they brought him on board the ship. And the captain was very, very angry. They tied him down, and they went back into the storm again. And the next morning, when they were out of danger, he whipped my grandfather on the deck in front of the other sailors to make an object lesson for everybody to understand they weren't supposed to be careless and fall off the ship. My grandfather was told by the captain that he had to become a Presbyterian because God, who was a Presbyterian, had saved his life that way and turned the ship back to find him. So he did become a Presbyterian. He learned how to knit, tie knots, and to learn his Presbyterian rules. He went on to become the father of 10 children. He married a Catholic woman, so my father had to go to both the Catholic Church and the Presbyterian Church when he was a little kid. My father was an older father. He was in his 40s when I was born, and my mother was in her 30s when I was born. They were both artists, and they used to take me to, when I was very small, they dropped me off at the Presbyterian Church and left me there and went home. They weren't all that religious, and I asked my father one time, "Why do I have to go to church?" And he said, "It's just in case God is a Presbyterian." I sat there in the car as we slid out of the car wash, and I turned to my mother and I said, "What were y'all doing when you went back home? Were y'all having sex?" And she grinned and said, "Yes."
That's great. I love the way that story unfolds. That's a moving story for you. That's a moving story for you. What's something that we can take away from this beautiful tale?
Well, I think it's important to talk to the people in your family about your heritage and to listen to their stories, even if it's just a little aside. Ask them more about it, because my mother never had told me until she was in her 80s about my grandfather, and my father had never told me about my grandfather, so I had no idea that I had come within an eyelash of not even existing. My entire family
Wow.
didn't understand that.
Yeah, That's amazing. That's amazing. You know, we've been talking about parents and children. So let's talk about parents and their children. You know, last week I claimed that stories told by children about their parents and parents about their children often emerge from emotional seeds, what Melanie was referring to earlier, seeds that are lodged in your head, your gut, your heart. Former student of mine, Stephen Winkler, told the story about his father on a program in 2015. It's a story that simmered in his heart. Nicole, if you would please.
So, as you know, my father played a huge role in my life. He's the smartest man I know, always ready with a joke, and anytime I needed his support, he was there to give it to me. And it's thanks to him that I am the man I am today, and I thank him so much for being a part of my life. But unfortunately, about a year ago, my brother called me, letting me know that he would no longer be with us. 3 days or 2 days earlier to that call, my father was placed in ICU, where he was placed in there for a severe case of the flu and some chest pains. My brother and I went to go visit him immediately, and while he was sick, he seemed so full of life. He smiled at us and was happy to see us, and we greeted him as we entered in, and as we asked him how he was doing, he quickly changed the conversation to let us know what we should do in case anything were to happen to him. Things like what we should do with the house, how to take care of my mother, and how I'd continue my education, which was a very important thing in him. So while all this was hard to hear, I didn't believe any of it. I have been through this before with him and other family members, and we've made full recoveries. So any advice he gave me, I took with a grain of salt. But one thing he said really stuck with me. He said, "I'm very proud of you, and I think you know that." Now, normally, anyone is striving to make the people that are their role models proud, and they live for that moment of acceptance, but something sour was about this. It didn't feel, you know, it was more dread than it was hope and happiness, and I just couldn't figure it out. And I didn't have much time to reflect on that as the doctor came to take him away for procedures. So we left for the day. The next day, though, I thought about what he said, and it felt like he was telling me that his job was complete and making the man I am today. But for me, it wasn't. I still had so much to learn from him, so much to do with him, and I relied on the future to give me those experiences. I still couldn't believe anything could happen to the Superman that was my dad, but after that phone call, I had no choice.
Yeah.
The hardest thing in life is seeing the most important person lie there still. It just kills you inside. And I just couldn't take it. But I asked the staff to give me some time and privacy with him, and they closed the curtains to do so. And as I held his still warm hand, I could only think of one thing to say. I'm not done making you proud. And I've said that every day since. I'm not done making you proud. Because he still makes me the man I am today.
Yeah. That was an incredibly touching story. Tatiana, let's give you a little bit of a shot at being on the boards with Nicole. You know, I would ask Nicole what she thought of the story. I'm going to ask you, what did you think of that story?
Well, with this story, it reminded me of a story that I told in your class about how my mom, she had passed out.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how when his father was sick in the hospital, but full of life.
Yeah.
It's like how I mentioned in my story, I said my mother... She's an older woman, but she has such a youthful spirit.
Yeah.
And seeing her laying down like that, passed out, lifeless, I just didn't recognize her.
Right. So that really hit a home with you.
Yes.
You can see where that seed comes from the heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are listening to guest storytellers Melanie Perez, Ethel Anderson Bilieux, and Tatiana Gago on So What's Your Story? Listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. And you can listen live online from any place in the universe, almost, at kpft.org. You know, Larry Thompson's concert was wonderful. Nicole, I know you were about to ask me. Ask me, how was the concert?
How was the concert?
It was just magnificent. Thank you for asking. You know, he is such a talented guy, and I know we're going to show some stuff on Facebook, and many listeners know who I'm talking about. Larry was here last Wednesday. He told this great story about a travel mug. Everybody knows the importance of a travel mug. That's how he starts the story. He says the travel mug is really important because the travel mug has to tell the stay-at-home mugs how your day went. And this is the kind of story that he tells. And he just goes on and on and on. You never even know when he's in a story until he's actually in it, you know. And he just holds up a mug, and he literally tells a magnificent story about it. He did that for an hour and a half. It was pretty amazing. It was really amazing. You know, it's been said that it's easier for a father to have children than for children to have a real father. Larry gave some wonderful renditions of fatherhood, too, on Saturday morning. And, you know, being a dad is the most important job a man can have. He said that. I said that. Many men do, at least they should. And you can just ask this particular father, whose name is Larry Andrews, telling this compelling story about his autistic adult son, Joey, on November 21st, 2011. We hear of autistic children. This is an adult autistic child.
As I mentioned a while ago, the first place I went with my wife after we got the news was to my mother's house, and she's a woman of great loyalty, not only to the Houston Rockets and the Texas Aggies, you know, but to her faith and also to her grandson. She asked me early on, pals, she used to call me, what can I do to help you? And I said, well, Mother, just a relationship, you know, an autistic child requires constant attention. You know, it's a 24/7 type thing. I said, just a break. So every week she took him out and filled his life with lunches and going to the museums and so forth, and they had a wonderful time together. When Joey was 21, we found a place for him to live. All his brothers and sisters had gone off to college, so he went to what we call ranch college, and he went up there to live with other citizens much like himself, and he and his grandmother wrote each other faithfully every week for those years that he was there. Well, a year and a half ago, my mother died. They lost that relationship in this life. The last thing she said to me was, take care of my precious Joey. And that's what I'm trying to do. So another expression of her love and her faith, she was a good Catholic. And at some point, when he was 25, she kind of had that sheepish look. I knew she wanted to ask me something. She says, can I baptize Joey in the Catholic Church? And I thought, well, why not? So, you know, normally when you join a faith, in birth or, say, young, when you're baptized as a baby, you get a chance to choose. There's a little theological examination. So I'm not a great theological person myself. I had left the Catholic Church. I remember my mother saying when I voted Republican, it was the only disappointment she ever had compared to me leaving the Catholic Church. But so that night, I'm talking with Joey, and I decide to prepare him for this tradition. I ask him, Joey, who is God? Don't know, he answers. Now, my Joey is a man of few words, but clear answers. I said, well, do you know where he lives? Joey looks at me. Don't know. Well, he never wastes his word. I couldn't help but repress a little smile, and you know, Joey's words often amuse me. But after this humorous phase passed, it occurred to me that my very own answers to those questions are, I don't know, I'm not so sure. So we go to the church the next day, and we're up there, we're presenting him to the church, Joey's center of attention, and he loves that. And so I have a chance to say a few words to the community. I say, we're presenting Joey to you today without the baggage of deep intellectual reasoning about his faith, but that I think he can teach you something about service and friendship that are something that will pass any educated person's test of religious love and faith. You know, he loves the candles and the bells and giving the peace sign at the Mass because he goes with my mother. know, Joey doesn't lie. He wouldn't hurt a fly. One time we were walking down a path, he saw an ant. He held up. I mean, his regard for life and so forth is deep and expressed. I call him the little Buddha because he's always in the present moment. So, and he's not discontent. He has a simple life, and he likes to be of service. So he's happiest when he's helping. So, you know, his tastes are pretty simple. He likes pretty girls, macaroni and cheese, and he likes Cokes.
Sounds absolutely normal to me.
Yep, and he's trusting and transparent. But I think that he may comprehend things that you and I don't all understand so clearly. You know, he's lived a life in a state of innocence, and perhaps in matters of faith and trust, it is he who can teach us rather than we can teach him.
Yeah.
I love that story. I really do. And there's a couple of things that make this so special to me. You know, there are a lot of stories that children tell about their parents, but this is obviously a parent telling a story about his child. And Larry was the single most apprehensive guest I ever had on this program. I always ask guests, are you nervous? This guy was unbelievable. But he was the perfect example of an individual who had a story that was more powerful than the apprehension that he felt about delivering it. And it was amazing what happened after this show. It was one of my earlier shows. And so moved were listeners that Larry received over $1,000 in unsolicited donations to help in the care of his son. Donations from strangers who never requested any type of acknowledgement. They simply sent money. Strangers sending money to a stranger who touched them. And I constantly argue that stories stretch the boundaries of the human heart, and don't ever doubt the power in storytelling as an instrument for assembling the very rich ingredients needed to cook up some compassion. And do I hear a little tune, Nicole? Oh my gosh, there's that goofy little tune, which means it's time for
Tips for the Teller.
That goofy tune means it's time for me to give you a little tip on how to darn your yarn. Now, the tip for tonight is one that pushed Larry Andrews to dig deep because it centers on the single most debilitating reason storytellers feel apprehensive, because the story isn't as powerful as the apprehension they feel about delivering it. So, here's what you do. You make your story more powerful than the apprehension you feel by internalizing these sentiments. Hell no, I'm not walking away from the story. My story is the most important message you will hear today. I matter and my story matters, and I want all of you to sit there until I tell you it's all right to leave. Or in the words of an old Yiddish proverb, what's truer than truth? The story. You let them know when you've completed the story. You alone tell listeners when to stop listening. Next week, Mary Edgerton is going to host Brian Boyle, counselor and all-around smart guy, I understand, who's going to talk about tales of complexity in family life, only on So What's Your Story, KPFT 90.1 Houston. Also, our fun drive kicks off next week, so please call during Mary's show at 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT with your pledges to keep this station alive. And So What's Your Story in your life? Listen, you can go up and down the dial, and you're not going to find anything like the diverse programming right here on freedom-fueled, corporate-free 90.1 KPFT. Melanie, who was a storyteller in your home growing up?
It was my grandfather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Grandfathers are popular storytellers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I used to talk about that all the time, how he was it. So what kind of stories did he tell you?
He would tell us adventure stories with me and my three brothers as the main characters.
Really? Oh, I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So he would just make them up?
Yeah, just make them up on the spot.
You were close to your grandpa?
Yeah, he was. He's awesome.
You lived in the same house or
he
just very
lives
close?
Here in Houston. My family lived in Arlington, but when we would go visit, he would always tell us stories.
Yeah. Do you remember any of them?
Oh, I know they always had blueberry bushes. He'd be like, he would say, oh, Melanie and Addison and Isaac and Zachary were going out to pick blueberries, and they encountered a bear, and then he would find some way to get us out of the situation.
Wow. So it was sort of a problem resolution. Mm-hmm. And you were the protagonist. What part did you play in the stories?
It would be me and my three younger brothers. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we would be the main characters in the story, and we would be going out to pick the blueberries.
Uh-huh. Did something scary happen to you in the stories?
Mm-hmm.
He made it adventurous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. lot of conflict. Yeah, I love it. Tatiana, how about you? Storyteller in your home.
It would have to
be
my
parents are out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you better say something nice. You have to include them.
Well, my dad, he's the one who does the whole storytelling, especially with his drag racing stories that he would do, like, internationally.
Drag racing? You told me that he's pretty cool. You told me your dad's pretty cool.
Yeah, he is.
Right? For a younger man.
Oh, well.
Right, right? He's a very young man.
Oh, certainly.
In, yeah, he is.
Spirit.
Absolutely. We believe it, you know? Us who are a little over 35 need to be seen as young. Always. Right? Always. So what kind of stories did he tell you?
His drag racing stories and also his youthful shenanigans he would get into.
Shenanigans?
Yes.
Like what, for example? Give us an example of one.
There was one where when he was younger, he would... there was this girl when he was about maybe 10 years old, and he would throw a pebble at her window. Mm-hmm. And call her to go downstairs because he wanted to see her. And then the mom or the dad was there and then chased them out of the backyard.
Ethel, you had to have storytellers in your home.
The entire family.
The entire family, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say it sounds that way.
We
and
sat
you know,
around the table at supper time and told stories about our day.
And I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised because, you know, I was going to say in the olden days, but that sounds terrible. Let's just say years ago, the idea of families having dinner together was obviously far more common. We lived in the same town. And the notion of spending time talking with each other, primarily stories, were just wonderful. Listen, you are a busy person. Do you have a website or something that people should know about? Or you just do all of this for hobbies? Or
SoapTexas.com.
SoapTexas.com.
Yes.
Because you make soap, you make lotion, you do art. You write, you will analyze our handwriting, and probably tell us a story if we want.
Yes.
And you'll do all of that in probably a half hour. Right? Right. How did it feel tonight, guys? How did it feel being live on radio? You've been on radio before, haven't you?
I've been on TV before.
You've been on TV before. Yeah. It's a little bit different. Melanie, what about you? What did you think?
It was nerve-wracking. I'm kind of shaking right now.
What do you mean you're shaking? What's wrong with those people?
I'm glad it's over.
Now, you're going to be doing this a while. What do you think? Changing your mind?
No, not at all.
No? No? Is it better than you thought? Worse than you thought?
This was amazing.
It was amazing?
Yeah,
really?
Great,
well, you guys
experience.
Did a great job. You did a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous job. You know, when introducing tonight's program, I claimed that stories can prove inspirational. Each of your stories, in my judgment, were just that. Thank you, Ethel Anderson, Bill Yu, Melanie Perez and Tatiana Gago, for taking the time to share your approaches to personal narratives. Each one of you told stories that were deliberate, thoughtful, reflective, and each with your own signature styles. When I listen to each of you, I really, really feel good about what I do for a living. I feel great about what I do. Thank you. Stay put, because Brian and Jason are next with To Tell the World. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great program and great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them to you, because our So What's Your Story team will forever be reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Gather around, KPFT listeners from all over the greater Houston area. We're inviting you to a unique, one-time show of epic proportions.
Join us for the second Saturday KPFT fundraiser, where KPFT's own free minstrel show and friends present a spectacular spectacle at Station Theater, Houston's home for long-form improvised comedy.
We'll see you there on June 10th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Station Theater is located at 1230 Houston Avenue. Parking is free down Dart Street and at the tire shop.
Visit stationtheater.com/KPFT for more details. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
This is Nuri Nuri, host of Blues Brunch. KPFT's next on-air drive is scheduled for June 15th through June the 30th. We want to reduce the amount of time we spend raising money on the air, so we started a quiet drive and we're asking for your help. Can you donate now at kpft.org to help shorten the on-air fund drive? If we can raise $7,500 through online contributions between now and June 15, we can end the on-air drive a day early. Every additional $7,500 we raise shortens the drive by another day. Your contribution in any amount will get us closer to the goal and get us back to regular programming sooner. Please consider donating today at kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.